This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, halfway through the program Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity. Winnipeg Jets game day. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. As I mentioned, our Instagram with some great photos from both the Jets games and the Moose games. That's Instagram.com/illegalcurve, and our website, as it happens, with the latest Jets news and Moose news, is illegalcurve.com.
Now let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
He's the host of Penalty Box Radio on 102.5 The Game in Nashville, Tennessee. He covers the Nashville Predators. He's a good friend of ours. Justin Bradford joins the program now. Justin, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely, guys. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Justin obviously brought you on to talk about the Predators. The Jets and the Preds haven't seen one another since earlier in the season. That's sort of a bit of an epic game with the parade to the penalty box by the Jets. The Predators, of course, ended up victorious, and they really haven't skipped a beat, putting up, again, impressive regular season numbers just like they did last season. 16-6-1 right now are the Predators top the Central Division. What's the attitude with the team so far? Obviously, the disappointment of losing to the Jets in the second round of the playoffs last year. Is there a feeling of sort of unfinished business and you know, that sour taste still lingering in the mouth of the Predators?
Yeah, you know, I think you put it right there how it is, and it's a different kind of sour taste. So after they lost the Stanley Cup final to the Pittsburgh Penguins, there was that chip on the shoulder of they squeaked in the wild card spot, and then all of a sudden made this deep run and played with the chip on the shoulder last year, and obviously that paid off dividends in the regular season. And then they got to that position where they actually had the target on their back, and they weren't used to that. And you could tell with the way they played during the playoffs last year that they were not used to being the team that was being targeted. They were used to being the team that was the underdog. And you could tell that Winnipeg in that series last year, they prepared for Nashville, and they were going to do everything they possibly could to beat the Nashville Predators, and they did. And the Predators now this year are coming in knowing that, hey, they have a target on their back. They're a good team. They should be a good team. They should be doing everything they can to compete with the likes of Winnipeg to win the division and to win the West again. And so it's a different attitude that, yes, they're good, but I don't think they're overlooking anything now because they know that the playoffs is where everything matters. And they've already mentioned that yes, they get a win here and there. They're doing well in the regular season right now, aside from that blowout against St. Louis last night, which I think everyone just wants to forget. But going in now and knowing what they have to accomplish in the playoffs is big. And this team's facing injuries right now. PK Subban being out, Victor Arvidsson being out. Kyle Turris could be out because he left the game early after taking a bad hit last night. So it's facing adversity in the regular season, which they didn't face much of last year in terms of having star players be out for long, long periods of time. Like PK Subban could be out. He's close. So Victor Arvidsson out 6 to 8 weeks. Still at least another month for him. So facing adversity also is a good challenge for them going into the playoffs because they didn't face as much of it last year and they won the President's Trophy. So they saw that one coveted item to win, but I think it's a different attitude this year where they know they have to play with a target on their back and know that any team, any night could absolutely beat them. Whereas last year, I think they got a little overconfident and they didn't prepare as well for the playoffs as they did the year before when they were the underdog and no one gave them a lick of opportunity where everyone was picking them last year. Not everyone was picking them the year before. So it's definitely a changing attitude from last year. And you can already see in the regular season and post-game interviews where, yeah, the wins are important, but they all know they have one goal looking into the playoffs.
Justin, you mentioned Victor Arvidsson there in your answer, and you mentioned that he's out 6 to 8 weeks with that upper body injury, and he was playing some really good hockey. He was a point per game, and he's been a very special player for the Predators since he came into his own, especially on that top line there. But how badly do the Predators miss Arvidsson, and are we starting to see how much his speed and his offensive ability impacts the Preds?
Yeah, you can definitely see that it's missed because he's the little engine that could. He's fast, he's furious, he's itty-bitty, he's tiny, but he causes a ruckus. And so you see that link being missing on the power play because he's one of the few players that is willing to go in front of the net and take a beating by the goaltender and by the defenseman to try to screen the goalie. He has the now in Nashville famous RV hop, which is he loves to do the little hop after a shot to try to screen the goaltender to get out of the way and the tenacity that he has to where he's always going. And you can see that in his game whenever he goes to the bench, he's usually huffing and puffing because he really is one of those players that he's giving everything he has in terms of his energy when he's out there playing his shift. And then he recharges and he goes right back out and does the same thing. So he's definitely missing that first line in any line, because you could place him anywhere and he's going to cause a ruckus, because he's one of those guys who will just go into the offensive zone, get a shot fired at the net, and then go and fetch the rebound. He's one of those types of players. Now, I'm not saying he's a missing link that the Predators can't win without him, because obviously they are, but they're missing that speed element, which is so important in today's game. And Victor Arvidsson definitely has that. And like you said, point per game player, 8 goals, assists in 13 games. So he's a little underrated in terms of, obviously, the Predators have Philip Forsberg is the goal scoring machine. P.K. Subban's the superstar. And Pekka Rinne's the Vezina-winning goaltender. But he's one of those guys that he obviously chips in terms of point production. But I don't think he gets talked about near as much, even though people obviously recognize him way more as in the past 2 years to see what he's able to accomplish, because he's a 30-goal scorer, which is so coveted now in today's league to score 30-plus goals. So he's obviously missing.
Lately, we just dropped Justin.
But once he comes back, that'll be another big, big opportunity for the Predators.
Well, you know, Justin, we have to ask you about a guy who probably does get talked about a lot, because it seems like he's just getting better with age as the Predators, I believe, oldest player. Pekka Rinne just seems to be having an even better season this year than he was last year. What have you seen from the netminder who earned himself a new contract?
Boy, every year now for the past 2 years, everybody's saying, well, he's getting old. He's not going to be able to keep this up. And well, granted, he didn't do it in the playoffs last year, which was a multitude of problems from the defensemen in front of him, the team in front of him. And Pekka Rinne struggled as well. But in the regular season, and even this season, Pekka Rinne is still playing like what people would expect Pekka Rinne to play like, whether he's getting old or not. And, yeah, he earned that contract, because it's one of those things that even if they start giving Yusuf Saros, the backup goaltender, more playing time, which you can see they kind of starting hard to do that, it's still Pekka Rinne's team. And he's still playing lights-out hockey. He's saving the bacon, which Peter Laviolette, the system that he has running in Nashville right now, it's based on strong goaltending, because the defensemen are going to activate a lot the blue line. And when that happens, you're sometimes going to have odd man rushes. You're sometimes going to have things where you have to depend on your goaltender to make some stellar saves to keep your team in the game. And he's absolutely doing that. Even in relief last night in Lewis, he still made some excellent saves, even though the Preds lost. So Pekka Rinne, still very athletic saves. He's already had a couple saves of the year, even though it's a very young season. But he's still showing that he has what it takes to help this team win. And he's still the backbone. That's why he is the star of this team. I know P.K. Subban has talked about a lot, but here in Nashville, it's all about Pekka Rinne. Pekka Rinne is the center of this team. Each of the players are always talking about knowing their face, that he saves their butts all the darn time here with Nashville. So he still hasn't seemed like he skipped a beat. Granted, eventually he'll slow down, but we haven't seen that yet, and eventually he'll regress a little bit. But still, we have not seen that yet at Pekka Rinne.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Justin Bradford, the host of Penalty Box Radio on 102.5 The Game in Nashville. He covers the Predators. Justin, last year, sort of, you know, as the playoffs were approaching and the KHL season was winding down, everyone was excited about Elli Tolvanen coming to join the Predators, thinking this is just another asset being added to the organization. Didn't make much of an impact last year at all, and actually is down in the AHL so far this season with the Milwaukee Admirals, just under half a point a game there. So, you know, a decent start to his North American professional career in Milwaukee. Are you surprised that he didn't make the team out of training camp? And is he sort of an ace in the hole that the Predators can use later on in the year if he keeps performing at the AHL level?
Yeah, I think you hit it right there. It's one of those things that eventually he will be one of those aces of the hole for the Nashville Predators. It's obviously taking some time to adjust, and he even admitted that it's taking a little bit of time to adjust. Granted, he played in the USHL in North America, so it's not really the North American ice that he's adjusting to. It's playing the professional game in North America that he's having to adjust to, aside from the KHL, because he obviously last year he killed it wherever he played, KHL. With Finland, international level, all the different places, he was so well played that we're surprised he wasn't just collapsing when he got to Nashville, because he played so many hockey games last season. And so in training camp, you can see there's flashes of what he's going to be capable of in terms of his shot and his vision on the ice. He still has to obviously bulk up a little bit, but he's a kid. He's still a young kid, and it's great that he's getting an opportunity in Milwaukee. And from some of my correspondence with me in Milwaukee, what they're seeing out of him is that his vision is continuing to improve. He's looking way more comfortable out there. He has scored some goals, but some of his passing is what's really starting to improve. And you know, when you're going to be on a team like the Predators, if you can pass the puck to another goal scorer, that's what's going to be really important as well. But I think Ilya Tolvanen and what you're going to see out of him is something that, yeah, maybe come February or even January, if injuries really start riddling the Predators, he could be one of those guys that gets called up. I don't think he's the first one to get called up yet, because you don't want to put that extra pressure on him. But he's developing, I think, at the right pace. And the saying here in Nashville is the road to Nashville goes through Milwaukee. Pretty much every single Predator that was originally drafted by the Preds has played in Milwaukee before. That includes Philip Forsberg, even was sent down after a few games in Nashville because they didn't like what they saw yet. He had to adjust. He did, and now we see what Philip Forsberg's capable of. I think it's the same situation with Ilya Tolvanen, is getting him used to playing in the NHL, in the AHL, at the pro level with bigger bodies, playing against guys like that on smaller ice, and having to make your own space in order to be successful. But I think he's developing very well. He's still very young, and it seems like he has the right attitude, because he had the opportunity to go back to the KHL after a certain amount of games in the AHL level. But he decided to stay in North America because he understands and he knows that this is the closest he could be to the NHL, is playing over here. And I think that's really good that David Poyle, the general manager for the Predators, or his words, reached Ilya Tolvanen in the right way to say, hey, you're this close, just keep working at it, you're eventually going to be here.
Justin, I wanted to ask you about Calle Järnkrok. If you remember, not you, you would obviously remember, you've covered the Predators for many years, but he was acquired in that David Legwan trade. He was drafted by the Red Wings, and you know, he had the career year points-wise last year, and I realize he had, you know, a minor injury earlier this year, but every time I watch Calle Järnkrok, and he can play center and he can play wing, I'm so impressed with him, and he's got 6 goals already this year. Is his importance finally starting to be realized by people outside of Nashville as kind of being that Swiss Army knife for the Predators?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And what's even bigger is his contract. What was really being talked about a lot last year was because David Poyle decided to protect Calle Järnkrok over James Neal. And now we see what James Neal's doing in Calgary, which is fart noise. What Calle Järnkrok is doing with Nashville Predators, he gets the hat trick earlier this week or last week. And seeing that contract that Calle Järnkrok, it was a 6-year, $2 million a year contract. And that is fantastic, especially for a two-way forward of his caliber. And what I've already noticed this year, injury aside, is since he came back from injury, he looks like he's willing to shoot the puck a lot more. And what we saw when he scored that hat trick was his ability to snipe. And we haven't really seen that much before. Yeah, he scored goals. He had a career year last year, but he continues to trend up. And that's what's really important to see for the Nashville Predators fans, is that he's trending up and only making $2 million a year. Yet he's the kind of guy that you can put him out on the power play and he can make things happen. But you can also put him on the penalty kill and he can make things happen. He can play on the first line, the second line, the third line, and the fourth line. And that's really important because that gives him so much flexibility. And like you said, he can play center, he can play wing. He is that everything guy out there. And it's good that a guy like that can score goals, because you have guys like that that where they could play and fit in on every single line, but they can't always contribute on those top two lines. Well, Calle Järnkrok can contribute on both lines, and now 9 points already this season, 6 of those are goals. It's showing his ability to score goals and really help this team, because that's what's been struggling. That's been a struggling part for the Nashville Predators so far this season, is depth scoring. It's all been relied upon that first line with Philip Forsberg scoring most of the goals. So having a guy like Calle Järnkrok, he's typically playing on the third line when everybody's healthy, to have him scoring goals and have depth scoring, that really helps his Predators team that right now I believe is tied with first in goal differential. And the Predators fans aren't really used to seeing a team like the Nashville Predators up there in goal differential and having a strong offense that's always been relied upon the defense and for the defensemen to score goals. So yeah, Järnkrok, a very good contract, and I think people are seeing why David Poyle thought that it's a better idea to protect him over James Neal, especially with the kind of money that James Neal was going to want out of his next contract since he was a free agent last offseason. So yeah, so far so good with Calle Järnkrok. He continues to impress and continues to go on up. He got 35 points in 68 games last year. He's definitely on the right trend to break that.
Justin Bradford covers the Nashville Predators as host of Penalty Box Radio in Nashville. Justin, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, Justin, can you actually put Drew in the penalty box for the rest of our show?
I mean, we absolutely could. It'll take a donation to charity, though.
don't tempt them, Justin. They'll scrounge up the money. Justin, thank you, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. When we come back, we continue our evaluation, who's matching, who's exceeding, who's underperforming our expectations. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
For Bufflin. Bufflin sends it for Ben Chiarot. Chiarot plays it back for Bufflin. Bufflin walks it in. Takes a look. High glove score! Dustin Bufflin, .500.
From the game earlier this year in Detroit, Dustin Bufflin's 500th career point. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity, Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN Radio 1290. The Jets and the Blues, 6 o'clock tonight from St. Louis. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, you can get Bernstein's delivered right to your door. Check them out online. Their delivery service, shopbernsteins.com. And if you're like our boy Ezzy Ginsberg and you're heading to Third and Bird this weekend, you can check out Bernstein's at Third and Bird as well. So wherever you are, Bernstein's can be there too.
Yeah, Third and Bird is at the Bay downtown. Awesome event if you haven't gone.
Have you ever been there?
Yes.
Really? You went last year?
Third and Bird or the Bay?
The Third and Bird.
Oh, no, I've never been to Third and Bird.
Oh, okay.
I have been to the Bay.
Yes, I know you've been to the Bay.
I love to go there to buy all my scarves.
Yes. As he's been living underneath the Paddle Wheel Queen.
I was going to say, the Paddle Wheel Restaurant.
Sorry, the Paddle Wheel Queen was the boat. Well, he's living under that too.
I know. Exactly. It's probably not too far off. Anyways, continuing on with our evaluation, we're supposed to be talking about the defenseman. We still have some forwards to wrap up before we get to that.
Drew, can we give you a minus 10?
You can. You've already given me more minuses that my ego is eventually going to get a little bit of a bruise on it. But let's continue on. We finished off. We did the T and the L of the TLC line. We have to get to Andrew Kopp, of course, who took that hard hit in last night's game. We do not know his status for later tonight in St. Louis.
No recall yet.
No recall and no practice for the Jets, of course, as they it's a back-to-back situation. If he's unable to go, I would expect Brandon Lemieux would be into the lineup for the Winnipeg Jets. Mm-hmm. But Andrew Kopp, he's got 3 points on the year, 1 goal, 2 assists. Again, TLC line, very much a checking line. How would you evaluate Andrew Kopp meeting, matching, exceeding expectations?
Yeah, Drew, I'm going to give him matching expectations. You mentioned that he's only got the 1 goal. So obviously Andrew Kopp would tell you himself that, you know, he'd like to have more goals, but we know that he's not expected to be a primary goal scorer for the Jets. I mean, this is a guy who's had 9 goals the last few years. So I absolutely expected him to be around 9 or 10 goals this year. And, you know, the goals will start to come, Dave. But for me, the thing that stands out for Kopp year after year, he can play wing, he can play center, very intelligent player, and he's reliable. And similar to Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev, and, you know, reliable might not be a sexy word, it's kind of boring, but this is a very intelligent, scrappy, forechecking line. So Kopp has been exactly what I expect him to be. Sure, I maybe expected him to have, you know, 3 or 4 goals by this point in the season, but as I mentioned, I expect him to get some goals. You know, maybe he doesn't get as many goals as we expected, but, you know, as far as his play, he's a very consistent player. So I'm perfectly happy with the way he's played this year.
I'm not going to hedge. I want to hedge because in my mind,
he's no hedging, no fence sitting.
I know. I'm going to go. He has not met my expectations. Mm. And the reason
harsh grader over here.
Well, no, but you know, I think it's a function, and I think it's probably from Jets fans' perspective, it's probably not a bad thing that we have high. Again, we sound like a broken record, but we have high expectations for this team. Andrew Kopp has been a player who, you know, don't get me wrong, I love the things he does away from the puck. I think you've got to give him credit for that. He does, you know, he goes on that fourth line, plays with Nick Petan and Jack Roslick for a bit, you know, steadies them, gets that fourth line some more minutes. I like what he does, but you know, he's also a player who's chipped in 9 goals each of the last 2 seasons. So I have a little bit of an expectation that he's going to be able to put the puck in the back of the net a little bit more than he has. Obviously, just the 1 goal. So to me, that he hasn't met my expectation of being able to score a little bit to help balance out the scoring for the Jets.
Moving on to the Jets' fourth line, Matthew Perreault is who we'll start with. He's sort of bumped up and down the lineup as he is wont to do. He's got 3 goals and 2 assists for 5 points in 21 games for the Winnipeg Jets. Matthew Perreault is matching, exceeding, or underperforming your expectations.
Can I give him an incomplete?
No. He's played 21 games. Why would he be incomplete?
Well, for me, the reason why I say incomplete is because, you know, he's bounced around from the second line to the fourth line.
Yeah, but that's nothing new for Matthew Perreault.
Well, I mean, I think his ice time is definitely down from last year, and we've talked about it on the show. I mean, certain games he's getting 4 minutes, 5 minutes of ice time. I mean, I'm going to say matching expectations. And obviously, you know, he doesn't have a lot of goals this year. You know, he started to play a little bit better as of late, and if Matty Perreault's on your fourth line, you probably have the best fourth line in the NHL. And I think talent-wise, with Jack Roslovic and Nick Petan, you're talking about a first-round pick and a second-round pick there. I think talent-wise, the Jets do have one of the best fourth lines in the league. Now, I think that Perreault needs to be playing more. And you saw last night he was out on the second power play unit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think his ice time has come up and all of that. But
he's averaging 11.04 per game.
But earlier in the season, averaging?
Well, earlier in the year,
five or six minutes.
Yeah, earlier in the year, he was playing. You know, as his role has changed on the team, his ice time has certainly changed.
Right. So, and my point is, when you're getting 5 or 6 minutes of ice time, mm-hmm. and you're not, you know, scoring goals or getting assists, I mean, that it's because you're not really being given an opportunity. So that's why I say incomplete. But for me, you could easily say that he's not meeting your expectations, Dave. But, you know, I'm going to say matching just because earlier in the season he just wasn't getting out there enough.
David?
Well, and I think that's a fair assessment. I think, like, it's hard when that's one thing you have to factor in when you're doing these sorts of evaluations is this function of how is the player's usage. I mean, you know, you give a guy like Kyle Connor minutes on the first line and on the second line and on the power play. Well, you know, it's easier then to evaluate that. But as he's right, it's hard on a player like Matthew Perreault, who is such a versatile player, is a guy that, you know, scored 17 last year, 13 the year before that, you know.
And look at his possession numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who's always been a good possession player. And there's more shots when he's on the ice for than against.
Yeah, he's got a good Corsi.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think he deserved more ice time and he's starting to get it.
I would suggest that his numbers would suggest that he has not met expectations, but based on usage, you know, especially of late, and again, asking a veteran player to stabilize two young players, I'm going to go with that he's met with my expectations.
He's met your expectations. Okay, we got three forwards to go and about 2 minutes to do it. So let's start with Jack Roslovic playing on that fourth line.
Are we bringing back rapid fire here, Drew?
Well, we're not quite bringing back rapid fire. Roslovic has a goal and two assists, mainly centering that fourth line.
To me, it's an incomplete again. I mean, yes,
I never said incomplete was an option.
Well, I realize he's played the majority of games, but earlier in the season he just wasn't getting enough ice time. So again, his offensive totals haven't been very good, but I don't think he's been used, you know, properly. And again, you know, Paul Maurice doesn't care what I think, but I just don't think he was being given enough ice time to really show what he can do. So I mean, I would probably say matched expectations, but I mean, in a way, you know, he's been disappointing because this is a guy that you expected to have a really solid rookie year, but you know, he's not playing on the power play. You know, he's playing on the fourth line. I mean, how much can you do when you've got different line mates all the time?
Dave?
Well, you know what, again, I'm someone who's watched Jack Roslovic a lot with the Moose, and I came in with high expectations of him being able to do something. But again, you know, we have to temper our expectations based on usage. And, you know, to me, the function of playing, you know, 5 to 6 minutes a night for, again, I get it that it's a slow progression for players. So to me, I'd say he's met my expectations simply based on what he's been given from the coaching staff.
Nick Petan has played 8 games for the Jets. He's still looking for a point. Again, the ice time has certainly been an issue.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I think Nick Petan has really started to come into his own. And you mentioned he's only played a third of the games, roughly.
Roughly.
Right? So, you know, he's matched my expectations, and, you know, it's nice that after, you know, what happened earlier in the season, the tragedy obviously involving his father, you know, he's now getting a chance to play. So that's great. That's the most important thing. The grades are not important. The most important thing is that, you know, he's now playing for the Jets because he's obviously, you know, bided his time in the American Hockey League and all of that. So, you know, I'm gonna give Nick Petan matching expectations.
Dave, quickly.
Same thing. I think that, you know, limited minutes have kind of, you know, made it difficult to kind of give him a true fair evaluation. But I think when we see him on the ice, when he's got the puck, he makes pretty good decisions. And, you know, we saw a couple of those slick passes to Patrick Laine, to Blake Wheeler. I mean, when he gets, you put him with, you know, uber talented players, or you give him some time on ice, you know, Nick Petan can do some things.
Last one, Brendan Lemieux. We haven't seen him in game action since he took the penalty in Finland and then was suspended as a result. He did play 9 games, including that game. He's got no points to show for it in those 9 games. An evaluation of Brendan Lemieux.
I mean, I would say that he hasn't met my expectations. And I really like his game. I love that old school throwback type of player, right? A guy that, you know, fights and grinds, and he's that guy that can drop the gloves, power forward. I think the stupid penalties have really cost him, and I think he's got to be more disciplined at the NHL level. I do think he can be a productive NHL player, Drew, and I had higher expectations maybe than some people because he made the team out of training camp. But I just don't think, even though he had limited ice time, I just don't think he was, I don't think he took advantage of the opportunity that was given to him.
Dave?
I think it's impressive that he sits fourth on the team in penalty minutes, having played, you know, a lot less games than everybody else. No, I mean, he hasn't met expectations, I don't think.
There you have it. That's the forward group. We'll tally this all up. We'll give you a summary towards the end of the program. But when we come back, Seth Rorabaugh is going to join us to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins and their continued struggles. And they're now without their number one goalie in Matt Murray. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Blues tonight at 6 o'clock puck drop here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and of course our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com in Pittsburgh, he covers the Penguins. We're pleased to be joined by our good friend, Seth Rorabaugh. Seth, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
21 games into the season, Seth, and you got to look all the way down at the bottom of the Metropolitan Division standings to find the Pittsburgh Penguins. 8-8-5, that's certainly not a place that anyone is used to seeing them. 2-6-2 in their last 10. How do the Penguins snap out of the doldrums that they currently find themselves in?
Well, I think a big part of it is just the secondary scoring. They're not getting really much of it. So much of what they've done has been, or the success they've had, as limited as it has been on the back of Sidney Crosby, of Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, and, you know, the quote-unquote superstar, Phil Kessel, in that regard as well. I mean, they're getting very, very limited 5-on-5 scoring from, you know, guys like Brian Rust, Riley Shahan, so on and so forth. And, you know, that was kind of like the hallmark, or one of the hallmarks of this team when it was winning back-to-back Stanley Cups, is so much of the secondary scoring was really kind of propping up the top scoring. So really getting very, very little help from the supporting cast. Also, they need to get their goaltending straightened out. You know, Matt Murray was put on injured reserve with an undisclosed injury earlier this week, and he's just has not been a very effective player really throughout the whole season. So he needs to kind of get whatever's ailing him straightened out and, you know, get back to form. And you know, they've gotten some decent performances from Casey DeSmith, the backup goaltender here and there, but this team isn't going to accomplish what it needs to accomplish without Matt Murray playing at the top of his game. And frankly, he's been he's played very poorly, to be honest with you, throughout the season.
You know, Seth, sticking with that secondary scoring, what have you thought of Tanner Pearson since he came over in that trade from L.A.?
So far, so good. Kind of was a little slow out of the gate his first two games, still trying to figure his way out. But then he had two goals next two games. He has two goals in five games here so far with the Penguins. But once he got a little bit more comfortable, he started looking like more of a contributor, kind of, you know, like a net front guy, kind of guy in some regards. Maybe not necessarily a blood and guts battler like say a Patrick Hornquist, but a guy who will go to the front of the net and, you know, create trouble for a goaltender. And showed off a really nice shot the other night against Dallas, where he just you know, wired a slapper from the left wing and you know, blew it past Anton Khudobin for Dallas. But he's starting to kind of figure things out. Plays a 200-foot game, a really complete player, made a fantastic back check, has prevented a goal last night, I think, for David Pastrnak for Boston last night. So, you know, as he's gotten a little more comfortable, he's, you know, started to contribute a little bit more here and there. And he'll be an important player because it looks like he's going to be slotted in next to Evgeny Malkin and Phil Kessel for the time being. And, you know, that's a line there where you probably want a steady defensive presence. And Carl Hagelin was that presence in years past on that line. And, you know, they're going to need a guy like that to play that 200-foot game to kind of maybe offset less than dynamic defensive games of getting Malkin and Phil Kessel.
You know, Seth, we're talking about the need for secondary scoring. A player who was thought to be potentially relied upon for that is Daniel Sprong, a second-round pick of the Penguins in 2015. He's a guy who had 32 goals in 65 games at the AHL level last year, but just hasn't been able to do it, it seems, at the NHL level. There's some rumors that he was, you know, potentially on the trade block. What do you think it is with Daniel Sprong that's just not going well this season?
Well, for one reason or another, he just doesn't have the trust of the head coach, Mike Sullivan, and the rest of the staff. You know, last night, Patrick Hornquist leaves the game at the start of the third period. He's a right winger, and you'd think, you know, that would open up more opportunities for the other right wings like Daniel Sprong, but he ends up only playing 4 minutes last night. You know, and you would think that's a prime opportunity for him to get in the lineup. And, you know, Mike Sullivan, for better or worse, just does not trust the guy, particularly when it comes to the defensive end of the game. And he's more willing to give guys with, you know, maybe a little less talent, like a Brian Rust or whoever, a lot more ability or a lot more opportunity on the top line when the opportunity presents itself. And, you know, Daniel Sprong has a really special shot. He was an all-star at the American League level, as you suggested. Put up some monster numbers with Charlottesville in the Quebec League years ago. And, you know, you can see it whenever he's just, you know, shooting around in practice. It's a different type of shot, but that's pretty much been the limit to his game, or at least that he's shown at the NHL level. And, you know, and maybe it's upon the coach to kind of give him a little bit more of an opportunity than he has, but again, for better or worse, Mike Sullivan just does not trust Daniel Sprong.
Seth Rohrabaugh is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins. He covers it for them for theathletic.com. Seth, Justin Schultz went out of the Penguins lineup early in the year. You know, he fractured his leg and is going to be missed for the majority of the year if he does come back. How much longer does Jim Rutherford run with this core group of defensemen? And is he looking, do you think, to add to the back end and maybe replace some of what Justin Schultz brought to the lineup?
Well, he's definitely trying to make a trade. I don't know if it's specifically, you know, looking for right-handed defensemen, but that's certainly a huge void for them at the moment, given Schultz's injury. And he's scheduled to probably be out till mid-February, but you know, you have to wonder what kind of shape he'll be in once he does recover, just given the nature of that injury. But, you know, Jim Rutherford has been working the phones pretty aggressively. He's been pretty upfront about, you know, trying to add something to this team. He hasn't specifically said, yeah, I'm looking for right-handed defensemen, but it's certainly something they haven't been able to replace really whatsoever. I mean, Chad Ruedel's a right-hand defenseman. But he's really limited in what he can offer. He's probably a number 7 or 8 defenseman at the NHL level. They have a couple guys like Jack Johnson, Jamie Oleksiak, Juuso Rikola, the rookie from Finland, a left-handed defenseman who could play the right side. But even then, they're somewhat limited. And on top of just being a right-hand defenseman, and we all know that's kind of a limited commodity in the NHL compared to left-handed defenseman. Justin Schultz is probably their second fastest defenseman after Chris Letang. So his absence really makes them slower on the back end. In years past, when they would miss, say, a Chris Letang, they could make up for it by having guys like a Justin Schultz or a Trevor Daley or a Ben Lovejoy or some other guys who had speed. And they don't really have that really in abundance at the moment. Jack Johnson, you know, at his age, 31, is a little bit slower than he usually was. Jamie Oleksiak, you know, 6'7" guy at 250, a good skater for his size, but he's still a guy at his size. So he's not necessarily the fastest guy in the league. So Justin Schultz's injury hurts them on multiple ways, but really it's just a matter of you know, not having a right-hand defenseman, not having the speed to replace him either.
Seth, just to go back to the goaltending, I mean, it's been well documented that Matt Murray has struggled this year, and obviously Casey DeSmith has done a really nice job in net, and the Pens are going to run with Casey DeSmith and Tristan Jarry in net until Matt Murray comes back from an injury. But I wanted to ask you, is this maybe a blessing in disguise for Matt Murray, the injury? Obviously, you don't want to see any player injured, but is it possible that this time off is going to maybe re-energize him and he's going to be able to refocus, and then when he comes back, it's going to be, you know, the old Matt Murray that we expect?
I'd like to think so, but you know, recent history really hasn't even shown that would be the case. I mean, he's dealt with a number of injuries over his NHL career, and he's missed a lot of time. And even, you know, not to minimize personal tragedy, but he lost his father unexpectedly last year and took some time off. And yeah, there's been times where he's come back and he's looked wiped out the first game, and then the next game he kind of just looks very average, very ordinary. So. You know, clearly something was bothering him and wasn't allowing him to play at the top of his level in terms of, you know, physical ailment. But in years past, when he has taken time off, he hasn't necessarily always shown that that rest has benefited him from the long term perspective. So, again, I can understand, you know, seeing, you know, there could be some benefit physically and mentally from some downtime, but his track record really hasn't shown that that's always been the case with him. So there's clearly something off there. He clearly needs to kind of get straightened out there, whether it's a physical or a mental issue. I'm not quite sure, but he's had some problems really ever since Marc-Andre Fleury's, you know, left as, you know, went to Vegas and really allowed Matt Murray to kind of take over as the unquestioned number one starter. Like I said, even this injury or this absence is somewhat curious in a lot of ways. But no, Matt Murray really, ever since Marc-Andre Fleury left, really has been somewhat underwhelming as the team's unquestioned number one starter.
You know, Seth, considering the winning pedigree of these Pittsburgh Penguins, are they daunted at all by the idea of that they're outside of the playoff picture looking in after U.S. Thanksgiving?
They're definitely taken aback by it. I mean, this is a group that's used to immense success. I mean, you know, they won back-to-back Stanley Cups. You know, they were the first team in 20 years to do that. And, they're usually, you know, in the class of the NHL. They're usually, you know, you would think one of the top five teams in the NHL. And the fact they are so far down, you know, this isn't like, you know, oh, they're in 10th place. You know, they just need to kind of string together a couple wins. They need to really, really have a strong, you know, run, you know, down the final, what, 77 games of the season to get into the playoffs. And they're not incapable of it, and it's not, you know, an impossible task, but they've really kind of burned away any sort of, you know, mistakes they can make down the rest of the season if they do hope to make the playoffs. I mean, they're very far out of it. I think I saw something like, you know, last year the last place team or the last playoff team, I think, in the Metropolitan Division had like 100 and some points, and you know, they would need to probably play, you know, probably around, I would say, probably about 70% hockey in terms of, you know, winning or point percentage in order to get that total. So they're kind of buoyed by the fact that the rest of the Metropolitan Division is kind of, you know, bland this year, so that helps matters. But they've really have kind of put themselves in a position where they have to play some perfect hockey down the stretch to even make the playoffs.
Seth Rohrabaugh covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for TheAthletic.com. Seth, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
Take care, Seth. Thanks again. When we come back, we continue our evaluations. We shift our focus to the Winnipeg Jets defenseman, who has been meeting, who has been exceeding, and who has been underperforming your expectations. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Chance for Kyle Connor. Scores! The sweet hands of Kyle Connor. Up top, short side, power play goal.
The sweet call of Dennis Bayak to match the sweet hands of Kyle Connor.
The dulcet tones of Dennis Bayak.
Yes, you'll hear him on the call tonight. The three-headed monster, Bayak, Edmonds, and Munns in studio in St. Louis, of course, in the broadcast booth for the Jets and the Blues. Tonight, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290.
Yeah, and, you know, shout out to the boys, especially Munsey, who made Jay and Dan scrum lurkers not once, not twice, but thrice.
Thrice. Wow. That's an impressive performance on scrum lurkers, as you also have been caught on scrum lurkers before. Yep. It's always a badge of honor to make
I would call it a badge of dishonor, in fact. That's why you'll only ever see the Illegal Curve mic, not my face.
You managed to blend into the background so very well there, Mr. Minuke. Anyways, welcome back to the program. We're continuing our evaluation of the Winnipeg Jets players at the quarter mark of the year. Who is matching, who is exceeding, and who is underperforming our expectations? This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Rumors has a great Black Friday special that's been extended for one extra day. Get it right now on their website, rumorscomedyclub.com. Buy $100 worth of gift cards and receive 8 complimentary tickets for any show between January 2nd and June 30th of the 2019, excluding concert series events. Get it right now, rumorscomedyclub.com. Sportsnet.com. Get it before it's gone.
It's a nice little deal.
It's a nice little Black Friday deal. I am not kidding.
Are you a Black Friday guy?
No, I didn't do any shopping. I didn't.
Wouldn't it be Black Saturday at this point?
It would be. I mean, it started last Monday, I think. I was getting emails about our Black Friday event starts 7 days early.
We're in Canada, right?
Doesn't matter. It was in Winnipeg, too. People were going crazy in Winnipeg.
No, I'm joking. I'm just saying it's just retailers taking advantage of an American holiday.
Yeah, well, I mean, fair enough. That's reasonable. But no, I didn't do any Black Friday shopping. Did you?
No.
No? David?
Inadvertently.
Oh, what did you purchase? What did you buy us?
Like inadvertently, like you were sleeping and you had your hand on the phone and by accident you ordered something?
No. I was grocery shopping.
Okay.
Which is a rarity for me.
I was going to
say. Usually I buy one item. Yeah. Smarties.
You for sure are a guy that grocery shops like later at night.
Oh, yeah. If you want to see me in the grocery aisles, I'll be at Superstore, usually. Sometimes Sobeys. You know, sometime between the 10 and 11 o'clock hour.
What did you buy?
Smarties.
That was what your inadvertent Black
Friday. I know. I think. Actually, oh, no, sorry. No, that was what I was there for.
Okay.
What did I buy? I bought a wireless Bluetooth speaker.
Oh, there you go.
Inadvertently, though, because I had no intention of buying it. And then I was there, and I was like talking to the guy, and I was like, all right, you know.
The Sobeys on Taylor has a nice little kosher section.
They do.
Okay. Thank you for sharing both of those pieces of information with our audience.
And I bought the new Game of Thrones. Or old. Yeah, it's new Game of Thrones.
Like the DVD?
No, the book. There's a new book that just came out.
Oh, okay.
Books, Jerry.
I'm not a Game of Thrones guy.
Paperback, Drew.
Paperback.
Books.
No, actually it was hardcover.
Leather bound.
Rich mahogany?
Yeah.
Okay. Continuing on with our look at the Winnipeg Jets defenseman and who is matching, exceeding, and underperforming our expectations.
Tiger Woods is underperforming.
You're watching the highlights of the Woods-Mickelson matchup last night. Let's start with Dustin Byfuglien. He's got 16 points in 19 games for the Winnipeg Jets. He's been absolutely on fire as of late for the Jets. How would you evaluate Dustin Byfuglien's performance this year? Matching, exceeding, or underperforming?
Yeah, Buff is matching expectations. I almost want to say that he's exceeding expectations, but the expectations are sky high. And I was talking about this with somebody recently, and you know, can you imagine Dustin Byfuglien on any other team? He's such a big part of the Jets' identity, and obviously, you know, he's been a member of the Jets since they came over from Atlanta. But you know, this is a guy that has an impact all over the ice. He's been the best offensive defenseman for the Jets, maybe the best all around defenseman for the Jets, with the exception of Josh Morrissey. So Buff is meeting my expectations, and you know, he does every year.
David.
You know, I'd say he's exceeded my expectations. I think he's been really engaged. I mean, you always expect him to be a dominant force on the ice, but I think, you know, we're looking at a guy who right now is on pace for around 60-plus points, which would be the first time for him in, I think, either ever or for a long time. No, it looks like ever. So,
his previous career high is 56 points back in 2013-14.
Right. And he's got a lot of 50-plus point seasons. Mm-hmm. But again, like I said, he's been really, really good, really engaged, and he's been a dominant force for the Jets. So, I mean, again, I feel like you need to qualify it every time. You always have high expectations for a lot of these guys, but he has been very good for the Winnipeg Jets team. So I'm going to say he's exceeded my expectations.
Buff's regular partner this year is a guy who unexpectedly leads all Jets defensemen in goals. He's got 3 goals, 2 assists for 5 points in 21 games. That's Ben Chiarot. How would you evaluate Ben Chiarot matching, exceeding, or underperforming your expectations thus far this season?
Yeah, big bad Ben Chiarot. I'm going to say exceeding expectations. And, you know, I think you could also make a strong argument that, you know, this D pairing has been the most consistent D pairing for the Jets. And obviously, you know, Chiarot had the big game winner, you know, the knuckler that got past, it was Braden Holtby in net, right?
Phoenix Copley.
Or sorry, it was Phoenix Copley in net. That was a few games back against the Capitals. And you mentioned, you know, he's got the 3 goals, but we know Ben Chiarot's got the big slap shot and all of that, and he's a physical defenseman, but... You know, I think he's shown a poise to his game maybe that we haven't seen. And, you know, Chiarot's been a member of the Jets now for, 5 years? I mean, this is a pretty steady defenseman. So I'm going to say exceeding.
Dave?
He's met my expectations. I mean, you're getting an opportunity to play with a guy like Dustin Byfuglien. He still makes those... Sometimes we saw it in yesterday's game where his mistake, you know, the slide, like he was supposed to do a give and go with Byfuglien. Instead, he takes a shot, hits the defenseman, hits the forward, ends up resulting in a breakaway for the other team. So he still, you know, has those occasional mistakes, but when you're playing on the second pairing, that has a tendency to be a little more glaring. So I'd say he's met my expectations for what you would think from him.
And Dave, a lot of times you don't notice Ben Chiarot out there, and that's a good thing. That means that he's doing his job.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I would agree with that comment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. We're talking about our evaluations for some of the Winnipeg Jets players at the quarter mark of the season, who has matched, who has exceeded, and who is underperforming our expectations. We want to hear from you on Twitter as well. Send in your tweets and your comments at Illegal Curve. Russell Franklin, going back to what we talked about with Jack Roslovic, says, Roslovic has not met my expectations, never mind limited minutes. What has he done with minutes earned? You guys are being way too easy on players. Appreciate your comments from Russell and that he didn't curse at us. So that's always a nice feature.
We might be, you know,
easy, beauty's easy, in the eye of the beholder.
Well, I mean, from a guy that's, you know, had a few D's in C's in his lifetime, I'm not gonna give out the hard grades. And you know, Dave's mom, former teacher, and obviously my wife Naomi is a teacher.
Yeah.
And
did
shout
she
out
grade
to my,
you at home?
Shout out to my sister Gillian, who's also a teacher.
I was going to say, and by the way, my dad was a former teacher as well. You can give a shout out to that. Yep. Does Niall give you grades at home? Like if you make the bed well, do you get an A? If you fail to make
he,
the bed,
as he gets stickers. If he takes out the garbage,
make the
a sticker.
Bed.
You don't make the bed?
We never make the bed.
Hmm.
We make the bed maybe when people are coming over.
Hmm.
But most of the time, there's always just. I mean, now there's just.
For the record, Naomi's going to kill us after the show.
There's baby toys and stuff like that. But
I'll tell you what, who's getting an underperforming mark is Ezzy for talking about this on air.
I'm very good at taking out the garbage and recycling.
Oh, that's nice. That's good. So you're not living in.
We're a big recycling family.
You're not living in, you know, with the Black Plague cursing through. Yeah. You know, your daughter isn't being subjected to heaping bags of garbage all over the place. Good job there, Ezzy. Let's continue on by talking about what a lot of people have referred to as the Jets' top pairing defense. That's Jacob Trouba and Josh Morrissey. They both have identical stat lines with 1 goal, 8 assists, 9 points in 21 games played. They play very similar minutes, of course. Let's talk about Jacob Trouba and Josh Morrissey. Matching, exceeding, or underperforming your expectations?
Yeah, if we're doing it as a package deal, I mean...
Do it individually, but talk about them both.
You know, for me, you know, Trouba and Morrissey have matched my expectations. And yeah, sure, guys. Maybe the offensive totals aren't as high as you would like them to be, but I mean, this is a top shutdown pair. I mean, look at the Jets' team goals against average. I mean, obviously it's up a little bit, but going into the game against the Flames, I think the Jets had allowed the fourth fewest goals on a goals per game average.
Yeah, their goals against was towards the top of the league, really up, and it's still, you know, fourth overall in the league. They've given up 58 goals, and that was before they've given up four against, you know, 4-5 and 4-6-3
in
their last three games.
Yeah, the empty net goals don't count, right? So I mean,
well, they do in the goals against.
Well, but
here.
I mean, they,
I know what
they
you're
really
saying.
Don't count. It's a team stat, and I mean, the Jets deep. That's the top Jets deep pair. So I mean, this is an excellent unit. And you know, I just as an aside, I like to see Morrissey out there on the 3-on-3 overtime. I mean, I've talked about that a lot, and you know, Dave and I both gush about Morrissey. I think he's the Jets' best defenseman, and I'm going to say matching expectations because, you know, with the exception of a few bad games here and there, I mean, you know what you're going to get out of these two.
Dave?
I would suggest that they both matched my expectations, and especially if we're grading them together, then I would say Josh Morrissey brings it up slightly and Jacob Trouba takes it down a little bit, but... You know, overall, it's been consistent. And again, you're asking these guys to shut down the opposition's best. So you know, I think they've done an admirable job.
The third pairing of the Winnipeg Jets has often featured Tyler Myers and Joe Morrow. Tyler Myers, what evaluation would you give him on this season, matching, exceeding, or underperforming your expectations?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going to say underperforming for Tyler Myers. I mean, we're going to have to be a little bit harder on him. And, you know, I like Myers as a person and as a hockey player. But, you know, this year, you know, it might be because he's on that third pair and he's maybe not getting the ice time that he was getting, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when he first came over to Winnipeg from Buffalo. But, you know, we've just seen too many uncharacteristic mistakes. And I think, you know, those mistakes were compounded in that game against Calgary, you know, just coughing up the puck in his own zone there. But, you know, I think he will turn around the season. So if we're doing these grades, you know, at the midway point or the three-quarter mark of the season, I don't think we're going to be saying that he hasn't met expectations. But based on the first 20 games, I think he's been underwhelming.
Dave?
Andrew Berkshire wrote a very interesting piece in the Winnipeg Free Press a few days ago, had it in the morning papers, about how a lousy start, worse luck make Tyler Myers play look worse than it is. And it was interesting. He looked at it, and obviously we can't get into it right now in terms of the depth of the numbers and what they've meant for Tyler Myers. But, you know, you can't help but look at his overall season and say that he's underperformed expectations.
His partner's been Joe Morrow for a lot of the season. Your thoughts on Joe Morrow's play? Of course, he came over from the Jets from the Montreal Canadiens at the trade deadline last year. 0 points on the season in 17 games played on the Jets' blue line.
Yeah, I'm going to say that he hasn't met expectations. He's underperforming. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Joe Morrow's game, and I know he's a guy that's really well-liked in the locker room. And my expectations were raised this year from last year. And obviously he scored that big goal in the playoffs for the Jets, but, you know, he's struggled at times, and that's why I think you might see Sammy Niku today.
Oh, interesting. We'll see about that towards later on when the Jets announce their lineup in the tonight's game between the Jets and the St. Louis Blues. Dave, quickly?
Yeah, I'm of the same opinion.
Same opinion. A minus one for Joe Morrow. We'll come back. We'll touch on Dmitry Kulikov during the final segment, but when we come back next, we're going to look at the Edmonton Oilers. They, of course, made a coaching change earlier this week. Todd McLellan out. Ken Hitchcock in. Is this going to change the fortunes of the Edmonton Oilers? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity. Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You know, these are difficult decisions, and you've seen, you know, a number of GMs in the same position speak, and you'll probably hear me say this, some of the same things. But there's still a lot of runway left in this year, and we felt that a new voice would be helpful.
Cha-cha-cha-chia.
Peter Chiarelli. That's clever. It took me a second to realize what the hell you're talking about. Peter Chiarelli, Edmonton Oilers general manager, addressing the media regarding his decision to dismiss Todd McLellan as Oilers head coach and to hire in his stead Ken Hitchcock to be the Oilers' new boss. The Oilers 10-10-2 on the season. That's good for fifth place in the Pacific Division. They lost last night in Anaheim. 3-6-1 in their last 10 are the Oilers. I've heard it described as an act of self-preservation. I've heard it described as the wrong individual lost their job.
Yep.
In any event, Peter Chiarelli still had one bullet left in his chamber, and he used it on Todd McLellan. And the Oilers, is this going to be the catalyst to turning around a season and turning around what is clear to anybody is a flawed roster that Chiarelli has assembled in Edmonton?
Yeah, and Drew, you mentioned that the Ducks beat the Oilers yesterday in overtime, and, you know, a point at this point of the season is just not going to be enough. And huge game tomorrow in L.A., and we know how bad the Kings have been this year, so that's a must-win for the Oilers. But when you're talking about, you know, Todd McLellan losing his job, it was just a matter of time before something was going to give, right? Because Peter Chiarelli makes that move, trading Ryan Strome for Ryan Spooner. But we knew that that wasn't really going to change much, right? Mm-hmm. So we knew that the Oilers had to start winning or Todd McLellan was going to lose his job. Because, as you mentioned, Peter Chiarelli, he's made all of these moves. He can't fire himself. He can't fire his players. So he fires Todd McLellan, who, you know, I'm a big fan. He's an excellent hockey coach, very well-respected hockey coach. The wrong guy lost their job. I mean, Peter Chiarelli has made some awful moves. Taylor Hall for Adam Larson is one of the worst trades in NHL history. It wasn't just a bad trade. It was an awful trade. When it happened, we all said that that was a bad move. Taylor Hall goes on to win the Hart Trophy. What has Adam Larson done? Been an average, mediocre defenseman?
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not picking on Adam Larson, but you traded one of the best left wingers in the world for a third-pairing defenseman.
You're not wrong.
You traded Ryan Strome, now Ryan Spooner, for Jordan Eberle.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible trade.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse Puljujärvi is turning out to be a terrible draft pick. I mean, obviously, you know, the amateur scouts have a little bit to do with that, right?
Yeah. But that the first round pick is on the shoulders of the general manager.
Well, right. And don't look at the history of the Oilers drafting. It's atrocious.
Milan Lucic, horrible contract.
Mm-hmm.
He signed that contract.
Mm-hmm.
Just awful. I mean, we talked about it last week.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to buy him out? Probably.
Well, we talked about it last week. You're right.
We know that they've shopped him.
Well,
the Oilers have tried to get rid of that contract.
Nobody's taking that contract unless the Oilers are throwing in a high draft pick to attach to it.
I think, Dave, somebody's taking Milan Lucic if he's making $2 million a year or $3 million a year. They're certainly not taking him at $6 million a year. So
with another 5 years to go on the deal.
Right, and you mentioned it. I mean, this is a flawed roster. I mean, Ken Hitchcock is going to come in there. He's one of the best coaches of all time, and they're going to win some hockey games, but is it too late?
Is he the right coach, though, for this team right now? I mean, given all, I mean, or is there any coach who's going to come in and rectify
this roster? Well, that's the question,
roster?
Right? I mean, can Joel Quenneville come in
next year
and turn this around? I mean, can it be Alain Vigneault that can come in? I mean, we know that Ken Hitchcock is not the long-term answer, and that's not just because of his age. I mean, we know that he's brought in here on an interim basis. And, you know, Darren Dreger talked about it earlier this week on the Afternoon Ride. I mean, the Hockey Canada brain trust of Bob Nicholson, Kevin Lowe, Wayne Gretzky. I mean, Ken Hitchcock has been a big part of the Team Canada coaching staff at the international level. Yeah. So they're very familiar with Hitchcock. You know what you're going to get. I mean, he's going to bring that defensive awareness. He's a details guy. Mm-hmm. He's an excellent coach, and his track record speaks for itself. Obviously, it didn't work out there in St. Louis. Mike Yeo was, you know, the heir apparent for Ken Hitchcock in St. Louis. But
his track record in Dallas last year wasn't anything to write home about either.
Well, I mean, it's funny you mention that because, you know, Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn had good seasons last year, and so did Radulov. So everybody talks about, you know, he stifles offensive creativity. I mean, those guys did okay. I mean, they just weren't getting enough from some of the other players. But
doesn't that sound familiar, though? I mean, you have top-flight talent on Dallas last year.
But what was he going to do with that Dallas roster? I mean, that Dallas Stars roster was not that good last year.
Right. So did, and this isn't a criticism of Ken Hitchcock necessarily, but I don't think he extracted any more out of the Stars last year. So I don't know why he would extract any more out of the Oilers. I mean, the Oilers are a one line or two player team with McDavid and Dreisaitl,
well,
and then everybody else
well,
is...
Well, no, I would throw Ryan Nugent-Hopkins in there.
Fine.
Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is an excellent player, but the point is...
But then it's the same as Sagan, Ben, and Radulov last year in Dallas, and I'd even argue last year the Stars have more talent than the Oilers do right now.
I'll tell you, the Oilers have two things in their favor this season. They have Connor McDavid.
And the Pacific Division.
And they have the Pacific Division. I think that you're asking the question, Drew, and I think that if the Dallas Stars were in the Pacific Division... as opposed to the Central, maybe it's a bit of a different story. But the fact of the matter is you're in the Central Division, you're getting killed by Nashville, you're getting killed by Winnipeg,
yep.
You're getting killed by Minnesota. Like, all these teams are destroying you, so it's very hard to make ground on them. Whereas if you're in the Pacific, it's a different story. So I think because the Pacific is so bad this season, there's an expectation, like obviously San Jose is probably going to make it. I think Calgary is going to make it. And I think it's really between the Oilers, Vegas, and Anaheim. Probably Anaheim's going to fall off. So probably the Oilers and Vegas fighting for that final spot in the Pacific.
David, it comes back to when Connor McDavid's line is not on the ice, the Oilers look like a very average team.
Yeah,
they don't have a true number one defenseman, and Cam Talbot is arguably not the answer there in net. Mm-hmm. He hasn't had a great start to the season. And sure, Mikko Koskinen is an upgrade, you know, over Al Montoya, though Lauren Brossoit is looking pretty good in Winnipeg. But there just isn't enough talent on this roster. It's a slow team. It's a flawed team.
Mm-hmm. When Alex Chiasson, who, as we talked about last week, might have been 2 weeks
ago. He's probably their fourth best forward.
He's their fourth leading scorer. And this is a guy who's bounced around from Dallas to Ottawa to Calgary to Washington. I mean, you bring in Alex Chiasson
on a PTO.
On a PTO, and you expect minimal from him. And the reason why he's got 10 points for your team is because the rest of your roster is so flawed that, you know, 10 points jumps out as a guy who's really performing well.
And what did we talk about, Drew, before the season started? We said that the big key, in addition to goaltending, was going to be getting scoring after the first line. So we said it had to come from Ryan Strome, who's obviously gone now,
yeah.
Milan Lucic, and Jesse Puljujarvi, who was given an opportunity and is still being given an opportunity. But what has Puljujarvi done?
He's got one goal. He's been playing at AHL Bakersfield as of late. I mean, he's not in the NHL.
And the truth is, again, you have to factor in, not everybody develops at the same pace.
Right.
I mean, the truth is that I'm not ready to write off a prospect. I mean, look, we saw it with Josh Morrissey. We saw it with Kyle Connor last year. You can't just because a guy gets sent down to the AHL doesn't mean his career is over.
No, and Dave, the point is though that they penciled him in.
Right. Oh no, I agree.
As being a member of the team, and they didn't have a replace. Like who's the second line right now? Like Milan Lucic, Ryan Spooner.
I mean, it doesn't matter. You know, they were talking about Ty Ratty as a solution. Ty Ratty, all due respect.
And I like Drake Cajula. I mean, former UND standout. Drake Cajula is actually a good player, but I mean.
It's a bad team, a bad roster, and I'm not sure Ken Hitchcock is the coach. I don't know if this coach even exists.
He does. He has a mustache, and he was formerly the coach in Chicago.
I tweeted it that I think the Oilers, you know, they meant to call Joel Quenneville, but they accidentally called Ken Hitchcock instead.
My suspicion is Joel Quenneville wants to take the season, see what happens with the remainder of his
options.
Did you see him at
the Bears game
last
Sunday?
That was amazing.
Do you see him tailgating at the Bears game?
I did see that. But back to what we were saying, I mean, the point is the Oilers have a tremendous first line, and then they have three third lines. Right, like with all due respect to a guy like Drake Cajula, he was a great player for UND. On a good team, he's a third line guy.
Yeah,
right. I mean, they don't have a second line, and they don't have a top pairing on defense. I love Darnell Nurse.
Should Bob Nicholson and the Oilers, you know, brain trust above Peter Chiarelli? Should they have prevented him from making this move? Should he have been the guy to get dismissed, or are you okay with them giving Chiarelli the opportunity to hire another head coach?
I'm going to make a bold prediction here, and it's not bold at all. Because Darren Drager said this. I mean, if Edmonton misses the playoffs, Chiarelli's gone.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, he's responsible.
He's gone. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah. I mean, how many years have we... I mean, we've been doing the show for, what, a decade now?
Almost. Actually, this coming February is our 10-year anniversary.
There you go. So we've been doing the show for...
I'll get you something nice, Drew.
Thank you. I appreciate it. There'll be a cake. And undoubtedly, it's going to be a cake for 40 that there's three of us here, four of us here to eat.
And Remus is actually going to pop out of it.
Oh, God, help us.
Oh, God.
But, I mean, we've been talking about the Oilers and their inability to build a roster for a decade, which is remarkable.
And again, that's not going to be solved by a coaching situation. I mean, that's just, again, and I talked about it a little bit earlier. I looked at, someone tweeted it out, I don't remember who specifically, but they tweeted out the way the Oilers have drafted over the last 6 years.
Sure.
And it's just like, again, we look at the Jets, right? Edmonton's a city where maybe the free agents aren't necessarily running to go to Edmonton, similar to Winnipeg, mm-hmm. unless you have that, quote, winning culture. And or an expectation that you're going to challenge for a Stanley Cup, and then that, you know, suddenly changes opinions. So that means you have to do something right, and your drafting is important. And that's not solely on your GM. That's on your entire drafting, you know, your scouting staff. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at those Oilers draft picks, it's
a graveyard.
Yeah, it's not good by any stretch of the imagination. And again, sometimes it's a function of rushing these guys, trying to get them in too quickly, like Puljujärvi. And the funny thing is, again, I'm not ready to write off a guy like Puljujärvi off, but I think Ezzie's point is well made. These guys had an expectation he'd be in the lineup. Not that he's a developing player that should probably be paying in Bakersfield, getting an opportunity to play big minutes, similar to what we were expecting with Christian Vesalainen.
And you look at the three players that were drafted ahead of him, Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine, and Pierre-Luc Dubois, they're all having a big impact on their teams. Mm-hmm. And Jesse Puljujärvi right now is struggling. Yeah, I realize that, you know, he's been, you know, productive at the AHL level, but they want him productive at the NHL level.
I was watching I was listening to Jeff O'Neill on Overdrive on TSN 1050 earlier the week, and he said, you know, just sort of shaking his head in dismay at the Oilers organization. He said, can you imagine this team if they didn't luck out and get Connor McDavid? I mean, you know,
they would be the worst team in the league
by far. Like, it wouldn't even be, they'd have one, maybe they'd have Leon Draisaitl as a top line player, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who's a nice player, and then they would have just an absolute embarrassment.
You gave away Hall and Eberle. That's what happened. You gave them away.
Yeah. And, you know, we got a good point coming from Ronnie Dhaliwal on Twitter, saying that
you're just saying that because you're his favorite member of Illegal Curve.
Well, anybody who thinks of me as their favorite is obviously number one in my books. He said, not as bad as some of these trades were, they also traded a first-round pick and a second-round pick for Griffin Reinhart. And they could have had Sebastian Aho, they could have had Matthew Barzal with those picks. Instead, they get Reinhart, who doesn't have the foot speed to play at the NHL level. It's a bad organization, and I don't know that Ken Hitchcock is the panacea to their problems. When we come back, one final segment, we'll talk more about the Jets. We evaluate the power play, the penalty kill, the goaltending, and talk about this potential outdoor game in Regina for the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
One final segment, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN Radio 1290. Tonight, the Jets and the St. Louis Blues. Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, Paul Edmonds with the call. Of course, we're going to have Huss and Rick on this afternoon, and then Kevin O. And I believe Jim Toth in studio with Kevin O. for the pre- and post-game coverage.
JT
tonight.
With the beauty mustache.
JT with the, you know, JT does the, do a great job supporting Movember, so, you know, he is showing off that upper hair, that hairy upper lip right now. So yep. He's doing a great job with
I
that.
I made my donation to Team 1290. Attaboy. Obviously, we used to do Movember. I did Movember 4 years in a row.
Yeah.
And haven't done it the last couple of years, but you always got to support Movember. Great cause.
It is. I agree with you on that. Let's continue on with our evaluations of the Winnipeg Jets at the quarter mark of the season. We've covered the defensemen. We've covered the forwards. Let's talk about the goaltending of the Winnipeg Jets.
You left off Kulikov.
Pardon me. I did leave off Dmitry Kulikov, who's only played 6 games for the Jets due to a litany of injuries. I'll allow you to get in your insights on Dmitry Kulikov. Is he matching? Is he exceeding? Is he under? Performing the expectations that you had for him.
Yeah, even though I'm not drinking the Kulikov, my grade for Dmitry Kulikov, I'm going to say that he's meeting my expectations. And, you know, Kulikov is a guy that I really think Tyler Myers misses. I really like the Kulikov-Myers pair as a third pair. So, I mean, Kulikov's a guy that you're not going to expect, you know, big offensive totals. Maybe he'll chip in the odd goal or assist here and there, but, you know, he's a very responsible defenseman. He can move the puck. So I'm going to say he's met my expectations, even though he's obviously been injured as of late.
Dave?
And it's amazing that even when I expect something from Ezzy, it still makes me laugh. Well done, Ez. So Ezzy's exceeded my expectations on this show.
Yeah.
But no, Dmitry Kulikov.
That's easy when your expectations are really low, right?
Yeah. We're just glad you show up. You exceed our expectations just by showing up.
But no, I would say he has not met expectations. I mean, the guy's getting paid a fortune right now. And again, that's not on him. He got the contract offer. He signed it. But you know, with that contract comes the expectations, and he's not meeting those.
Winnipeg Jets goaltender Connor Hellebuck has started the majority of games, 17 of the 22 games for the Jets. He's got a .910 save percentage and a 2.91 goals against average. Numbers are both down from last season when, he was a Vezina finalist. Matching, exceeding, or underperforming your expectations coming off of a big offseason contract extension for Connor Hellebuck?
Yeah, Drew, I'm going to go -1, and Russell Franklin's going to like that one because I'm going to be a little bit more harsh on Bucky here, but this is a Vezina Trophy finalist. He was a runner-up to Pekka Rinne for the Vezina Trophy. And, you know, Hellebuck has not had a bad season. I'm not saying that at all, but he just hasn't been at the same level as last year. And he's had some excellent games. I mean, I thought he was excellent in Finland against Florida in the Global Series. I thought he was, maybe the game against Washington at home was his best game of the year. But, you know, obviously, you know, the game against the Flames, he was not good in that first period. And, you know, I didn't think he was excellent yesterday either. I'm not saying that, you know, that loss is on Hellebuck or anything like that.
Not solely on him,
but I mean, Hellebuck is an elite goaltender, and he still is. But I'm just saying, I think, you know, his bad games have been pretty bad. And you mentioned his numbers. Everybody likes to look at the numbers. I mean, save percentage is the more important number there. Goals against average is a team stat. We all know that. It's a flawed statistic. I'm going to have to say he hasn't met my expectations simply because my expectations are sky high for him. He's an excellent goaltender, and I think he will be better. But, you know, based on the first quarter of the season, I got to go -1.
Dave?
Yeah, I'm with Ezzy. I think he's been really good in stretches. I think, you know, similar to the Jets, he's still trying to find his complete game. So I'm going to go, because we have such high expectations for him, I would say he hasn't met them. So it's -1 for me.
Backup goaltender. Nobody really knew much about him coming
plus
over
one.
From Edmonton.
I mean, let's get right to it. Lauren Brossoit has been excellent. He's probably going to play tonight, even though there is a chance that Hellebuck does play tonight versus the Blues. But, I mean, Brossoit's numbers are sparkling. I mean, he's been excellent. So +1, you know, he's been, I think, a revelation for the Jets. An excellent option right now is the backup goaltender. And, you know, considering that heading into the season, he only had, you know, 25 to 30 games of NHL experience, he was a bit of an unknown coming from the Oilers. So for me, easy +1.
I concur with my colleague.
Special teams for the Winnipeg Jets. The power play, obviously, is second in the NHL.
Yeah. That's another one you don't even have to think about.
Yeah. I was going to say the power play seems like a pretty straightforward one. And the penalty kill for the Winnipeg Jets, which is not as good as the power play, but it was great last night. It's actually moved from being in the mid-teens to all the way up to sixth overall after yesterday's performance.
+1. I mean, the special teams have been excellent. I mean, we expected the power play to be excellent this year. But the penalty kill, I mean, I think it was really illustrated in that game on the road earlier in the season against Nashville, killing off 9 minor penalties, 8 in a row. The special teams have been just really the story of the season for me so far this year. When the power play goes out there, especially at home, I mean, you expect the Jets to score now on every single power play.
Within the first 15 seconds of
really,
the power play, too.
I mean, Washington and Tampa Bay, I mean, you know, they've kind of been the gold standard, but the Jets have the best power play in the league. It's pretty incredible. I mean, I think it's second now.
Second,
but
yeah. Second behind,
splitting hairs here.
Second behind the Colorado Avalanche, right. But it's one of the top threats.
Yeah,
of
was number one for a while
in the NHL. So in terms of the team statistics, power play, penalty kill, both you have given out +2 on both of those. In terms of players, forwards, defenseman, goaltender, Ezzy ends up with a -1 overall in terms of just under expectations, and Dave a little bit harsher overall, -4 Whoa. In terms of expectations.
Cracking that whip.
Dave Minuk, harsh grader Dave Minuk. Of course, we're talking about a team that's overall, you know, 12-7-2, so grades aren't great, but the performance on the ice has been better in terms of overall.
And that's just, and again,
speaks
it all,
to the talent
all,
on the team.
Speaks to the talent on the team, and it also speaks to our expectations for the Winnipeg Jets.
Quickly, we will maybe spend some more time on this next week or on Wednesday's program when midweek returns at 7 o'clock on Wednesday. You know, there's a little bit of chatter. It sort of was an under the radar thing, but you wrote about it on the website, Dave. Possibility about the Jets playing an outdoor game potentially against one of their Alberta rivals at Mosaic Stadium in Regina. You know, haven't heard anything official from the Jets, haven't heard anything official from the NHL, but it sounds like it might be in the works.
Yeah, Elliot Friedman reported it, and I think it would be great, whether it's the Oilers or the Flames playing the Jets. I mean, it would just be fantastic for the city of Regina, so hopefully we see it.
Yeah, and apparently the NHL went out and examined Mosaic Stadium, which is obviously a good sign for them that they're, you know, one step closer. It'd be, I think, the first neutral city game for the NHL in Canada. They've done that in the States, in Michigan, at between, I think, the Leafs and the Red Wings.
And they're doing it on January 1st. They're playing at Notre Dame Stadium,
right,
between the Blackhawks,
right,
and the Bruins.
So it's been done before, but I think it'd be great. I think the Jets have played one, obviously, the Heritage Classic here in Winnipeg. The Flames have played one, which was the original one in 2003. I think every other team has played at least two or three. Oh, the Canucks have also only played one. They played one against the Senators. So it'd be great. I think the Flames-Jets outdoor game, especially based on how these two teams are kind of on that upswing, I think it'd be a lot of fun to see.
Boys, if we're talking Mosaic Stadium, are we doing Grey Cup predictions?
Yeah, we can do Grey Cup predictions. It's a good point, Ezzy. Real quick, though, as before we have to wrap up the program, Grey Cup Saturday coming up here on TSN Radio this afternoon. And, of course, live coverage pre the game and post game tomorrow here on your home of the Grey Cup here on TSN Radio 1290. The Stampeders or the Renegades? The Red Blacks, pardon me.
And obviously, boys, we're diehard Bombers fans. We're obviously going Ottawa Red Blacks all the way.
That's who you're hoping for, or that's who you think is going to win?
Both.
Oh, interesting. David?
I don't even want to offer an opinion. I don't really. I mean, I'm going with Calgary.
Dave's going with Calgary. I think Calgary wins this one. I can't imagine them losing in province. I mean, they love to be the Buffalo Bills of the CFL, though, getting to the Grey Cup and then choking it away. But I think the Stampeders have been the best team in the CFL all season long, and I think they're going to win tomorrow the Grey Cup. Again, you can hear the game live on TSN Radio 1290. That's it for the Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to all of our guests, Seth Rorabaugh of TheAthletic.com, Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio, he covers the Predators, Brian Engblom, Tampa Bay Lightning analyst, and of course, Luke Korak, St. Louis Blues NHL.com correspondent. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on our website, IllegalCurve.com. It's available on TSN1290.ca. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Producer James DeRoschuk doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.